Are you constantly having to explain why certain viewpoints are problematic? Dude, being transracial is not a thing because it's an appropriation of a racist struggle without having to live it.
In this video from last year, Brooklyn-based blogger and comedian Akilah Hughes shares a commentary on our current racial climate.
Have you stopped silencing yourself when the ignorant assholes from high school comment on your Facebook posts?
Oh yeah, black on black crime. So basically what you're arguing is that because black people have killed black people, white people should be able to kill black people. Like, that's the argument?
Demonstrating the toll that the conversations take, Hughes begins to direct her comments toward a toilet bowl.
Your heritage is hateful, dude. Get over it.
And a trash bin.
Black lives matter! Then yeah, you probably have racial discussion fatigue syndrome, or RDFS. Look, times are hard, and lots of people are legitimately stupid. But luckily, there are some things you can do.
Well, okay, maybe she's not being totally serious, but she's not totally joking either. I'm Brian Ellison, and today on KCUR Central Standard, we're talking about how we talk about race and racism and race relations in our community and in this country. It's an ongoing conversation and one that many people of color say, frankly, they're tired of having to have. Here to help us think about all this from his perspective is Randall Jelks. He's a professor at KU. Randall, welcome back to KCUR.
Hey, thank you very much.
It is great to have you. So I want to start this conversation about race by asking, do you think there's a problem in the way society today is talking about race?
Well, I think it's in the United States. That problem has existed since 1776.
Yeah.
I think that we have not been able to adequately talk about, when we're talking about race, we're talking about American history. And so we're not able to talk about American history very well because some people feel like you're accusing them of an evil. And from my viewpoint, we all participate in the social structures around us, and none of us can escape that. But Americans like to think in naive, individualistic terms, and so we don't belong to structures. It's nothing I did. I think the great writer James Baldwin, one of the things I note in The Fire Next Time and many of his writings is he takes on American innocence. We like to be innocent. But the fact is that we're all participants in social structures that affect one another, not just in the United States, but around the globe.
So do you think that assessment that people of color and African Americans in particular are especially frustrated now with the conversation is accurate? Is it getting worse?
I don't think it's, in my estimation, it's getting real. It's not getting worse. I mean, the fact is that many Americans have had to deal with the reality that they are a minority in the world, not just in the United States. We make up 5% of the total world's population. I mean, and more people look black, brown, yellow, and red, whatever the kind of hues we want to say, than they do like they're Northern European. Mm-hmm. And this is the change in global reality, not just the United States. And so talking about race raises all the kinds of anxieties about status. Is my status shifting? Is my status, am I losing status in the world?
You are a professor of African American studies and of African studies. You talk about these issues all the time. Are you perceiving that students you talk with or other African Americans or people of color are having a hard time talking about this today? Is there this racial discussion fatigue syndrome that video semi-joked about? Is it a thing?
Oh, I think yes, among a certain generation, I think absolutely. In all fairness, let me give both my departments. I am a member of the American Studies Department and African and African American Studies. And yes, people get fatigued about it. I teach about inequalities and how they're reflected through a number of factors, from religion to race. Inequalities come at us in all kinds of ways. And so racial inequalities is one feature of that African Americans have constantly, no matter your class status, have had to deal with. I mean, whether you are a professor like myself, or a ordinary worker in a fast food, we all have the same processes of race to deal with, whether that as a student in a classroom, being the only student, we all have that. So the fatigue is that daily we deal with the questions of race, whereas my colleagues may not have to deal with the questions of race because they can walk and they are assumed to be included. But daily, and it's day in and day out. And so the frustration grows real depending on where you sit.
And you said of a certain generation when you mentioned that you think this fatigue is real. What is it about the young – I assume you mean the younger generation more fatigue?
Yeah, I think millennials are – you know, I grew up in an era dating myself. You know, I was born in the mid-50s. And so I grew up thinking that it was a struggle and that it was important to have that struggle. Many of my students felt like, well, I thought it was your generation and the generation before that had that struggle. And shouldn't we be over this already? And so that there's a heightened frustration. And that frustration, but that frustration had been building. It had been submerged. I mean, I think mass incarceration, I think the way drug epidemics have been dealt with in communities, all of these have been political choices that political leaders have made. And so finally it bursts back to the scene. But it's been there. It's been submerged. 1992 LA riot. We've had these things, but the problems have never been dealt with.
Well, which perhaps is that some of the source of the frustration that within the memory of the people in the conversation there are all of these incidents, events, all of which triggered lengthy and in-depth conversations, and none of which seem to have changed anything.
Right. Well, I mean that's the politics of this. I think you can't separate. The questions of race and economics from the politics of it. Frankly, my biggest frustration in my has been that politicians, American politicians, have used race as a whipping boy. And that is that Black Americans, Brown Americans of all kinds, Latino, Latinas, have been used as fodder, as the other, to keep other people from thinking about their own position, their own economic standing. You know, there's an old line in the Black community is like, well, everybody wants to be, think, well, I'm not Black, and that gives you standing. But the problem is it really doesn't give you any economic standing because you're still broke. Mm-hmm. And you're still aligned with those Black working people who are in the same class position that you are, except you're white.
As you think back on your own growing up, do you feel like you're having different conversations today about race, more or less productive conversations?
Oh, I think the conversation has been throughout my life continuous. It's been a continuous a dialogue.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up till I was 14 in New Orleans, and then I moved to Chicago. Not that I moved to Chicago, and we moved to Chicago, and I went to high school in Chicago, Illinois.
And living in those environments of New Orleans in the 50s and 60s, followed by Chicago, this must have been a very dynamic conversation.
Oh, well, the conversation has always continued in very different kinds of cities, but very much the same problematics that were going on. You see, race. the truth is about the United States that we all need to really come to grips with is the United States was formed as a racial democracy. And I don't, that's nobody's fault. That's just the reality of it. It is that, you know, in the 19th century, a lot of people argue, you know, this democracy was for white people. And so it's been, unfortunately or fortunately, wherever, however you want to look at that, it's been for the leadership of people who are not included, that you had to fight. You have to fight to say that democracy as a governing philosophy is not a racial thing, and that this governing philosophy had economics tied to it. And let's very much put on the table, the United States was a slave-holding society. The largest corporations of the day, the most valuable worth of the day, came in the bodies of slaves who grew products that went on the worldwide market. Cotton was a worldwide production, sugar, tobacco, all of those things. And Americans really want to blind themselves to their own history and not think about these kinds of questions and what that meant when it came into the contemporary world.
And is that part of the problem in the conversation? Is that in your experience, is that one of the things you find wearying in the conversation? Oh. Is it when white people fail to sort of acknowledge that history?
Well, you know, people in power always fail to acknowledge history that they don't want to deal with. And I've lived in other countries. And there is a, you know, if you were in Turkey and you asked the question about the Armenians, people would say, oh, no, that didn't happen that way. If you were in another country, West Africa, and you saw imperial powers who sold slaves, they wouldn't say, oh, we were innocent. Everybody wants to be innocent of their own responsibilities in systems that are global, that are nasty, that are brutish at times. And Americans are no different. Americans want to be innocent. We are the land of democracy. But the truth is that that democracy was limited. There's a wonderful old book called American Slavery, American Freedoms, which point out the dichotomy of the Constitution was really structured around that you had this enslaved population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you think then that in light of that, when a white person wants to, I guess for lack of a better term, do the right thing and engage and try to come to a deeper understanding, what is it that we need to do differently?
Vote.
To not be so wearying in the conversation.
Well, vote and not castigate people for having different attitudes about what is the responsibility of government, what is the responsibility of corporations. Should we have public institutions? To me, it's a matter of politics and economic philosophy. And this is very much coming from an individual. Mm-hmm. This is very much not about whether you like me a lot. Everybody's got friends. Yeah. I mean, you know, I got white friends, you know, and, you know, do I like them? Yes. Do I hang out with some of them? Yes, of course I do. But that has anything to do with the kind of structural barriers that keep people from having a full life. There have been a number of studies. African Americans on the whole had lots of white friends, maybe more than white friends had black friends. But that has nothing to do with the politics of this. The politics of this is very simple. People vote against their own economic interests, and they very much and they very much use race as a means. Now I'll be real specific.
Right.
It is to no end bothersome to me that Ronald Reagan is enshrined as this great president. But everyone forgets two things. Ronald Reagan's first political, when he started his political campaign, went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, and gave a speech on states' rights. Now, states' rights comes from the Civil War era, that the Southerners, rather than saying they were fighting for for on behalf of slavery, they said it was about states' rights. Well, Philadelphia, Mississippi was where three civil rights workers were heinously murdered. So that's a signal to every black person that this dude is making the great dog whistle. Second, Ronald Reagan he started this line on the welfare queen, using this as the signal of a poor black woman somehow hustling the system and got Cadillacs and other things. And I'm still looking for her. If she can hustle the welfare system like that, I want to find it. But those are racialized symbols, and they mean things to people. And if you understand American history, you would understand that these mean things. And we let our politicians get away with it.
So when one of your students comes to you, let's say a black student comes to you and says, I am tired of teaching my friends about racism. I am tired of telling white people about systematic oppression, about the nature of privilege. I just don't want to have that conversation anymore. What do you say to him?
I say, don't. It's my job. I get paid to teach. It's not a student's job. And I tell my fellow colleagues, it's not your fellow student's job to teach about their experiences. It is our job. You know, I get paid to teach. I feel like that teaching is a wonderful, rich vocation for me. It's not my student's job to have to teach everything to me. Now, when you're friends with somebody and you're having conversation back and forth, you're learning things about. That's an intimate relationship. But there is a difference between when someone says to you, well, what's your experience in a public setting? Well, that's, No, nobody's entitled to have to teach about anything about their intimate self.
I want to ask you just one more question that sort of puts this on a practical footing. Across the state line from where you teach in Lawrence, over here at Mizzou, there was another incident this week. A fraternity has been suspended from campus after some racial slurs were directed at a group of black students. After that happened, there was a meeting, and similar to a year ago when there were protests on campus, there was a desire to create safe space, a place where black students could talk with one another about what happened and not have to immediately interpret all of this to the broader community. Do you think that's the right direction to go? And what would you advise that group?
Well,
of students?
I have what I wouldn't advise those group of students anything. I would advise the administration. So what is the
and what would you advise them?
The administration is what is how can you create teaching. I mean, I don't think this is where we're an educational institution. I don't think it's up to the students to teach those people in the fraternity or sorority or whatever it is. I think it's up to the administrators to set ways of let's talk about this with these students.
Well, I appreciate you being here, Randall. This is the first of many general conversations we're going to have about this on Central Standard and throughout our programs here on KCUR. But I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you.
Randall Maurice Jelks is Professor of American Studies and African and African American Studies at the University of Kansas. KCUR Central Standard is taking a break, and when we come back, we're going on a quest to find the story of a long-closed roadhouse in KCK. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll find out more in just a minute.